So here we are again, and we always pretty much start with the same place, saying that, you know, of course, we're beings of infinite energy, and we've seen this slide each class. You know, Yogananda, now he was saying this back in the 40s or 50s, but at that time he said that 1 gram of flesh could light the entire city of Chicago for 2 days. Maybe it's 1 day now because there's a lot more electricity there than there was then, but still that's really an extraordinary amount of energy that we hold in our bodies. Also said that we have the equivalent of 30 hydrogen bombs in our bodies with the energy that we hold within us. So we have an extraordinary capability to utilize energy and work with energy. So this the center of each one of our energy bodies, of course, is the astral spine. And within the astral spine are the chakras. So this is a really lovely depiction of that, I think. You know, you could think of each chakra as a vortex of energy. And I like this slide because it really looks like vortices of energy there. And these vortices of energy are the energetic blueprint that underlies our physical form. So we talked about the energetic blueprint before, and now we're talking about our energetic blueprint. And that, the energy patterns that are present in the chakras define who you have been in past lifetimes and who you are in this lifetime and who you will be in the astral realm and who you will be in subsequent lifetimes on the physical plane. So that is consistent, the energy patterns within the being that you are through your incarnations. And that is what we work to change as we work on the spiritual journey. So the chakra system really organizes the spiritual path that you follow. And energy flows through the astral spine, and the chakras will reflect where the energy is flowing freely and where the energy is not flowing freely. So there it is, flowing through the chakras. So as we progress on the spiritual path, we progress in orientation up the astral spine through the chakras. And we journey from lesson to lesson. And these are some of the major issues that are foremost in some of the chakras. And so hopefully we progress from lesson to lesson out of delusion and to this ultimate goal of spiritual union. So the chakras carry forward energy patterns from past life experiences, as I said, and these patterns influence your present lifetime, and in the same way, your future lifetimes are patterned by the experiences that you have in this lifetime and your responses to those experiences in this lifetime, and that's what we might call karma. That's one way we could define karma. So we've looked at this before, and we've said, you know, this is the spiritual or multidimensional anatomy of the human body, and that each one of us has these bodies, the physical body and the astral body and the causal body, and these bodies are superimposed over each other, and the chakras are connecting points between these bodies. So astral body, we talked about before, astral means light or energy, and so the astral body is the body of light or energy. And the causal body is the body of consciousness or thought or mind or idea. And that causal body is where everything begins. So the astral body connects the causal body with the physical body through breath or through prana. That's the connection. And the astral body is where the actual work of transformation occurs. So the physical body and all of physical reality result from this interplay. And to create our physical bodies or to change the physical world, what we have to do is we first have to conceptualize the change or conceptualize the creation, and then we focus and direct our energy to manifest that creation. So another way to say it is that there's this, and we've said this before, that there's this energetic, underlying energetic pattern which carries information, And that information guides the cellular growth of the physical structure. So any disturbance or distortion in the energy pattern, however that is created, causes physical disease. And if we balance that distortion in the energy body, we can heal physical disease. So we talked before about Kirlian photography. That was in the first class, which I think some of you missed. And so I put this photograph in. We didn't have this one before, but this is when this is the process of Kirlian photography, this kind of electrophotography that we have with which we can actually reveal the energetic nature of reality. And so we did also have this slide before, and this is a picture of a whole leaf, but we said that the Kirlian photograph of a bud would reveal the leaf that the bud is to become. And we had this slide, which shows a photograph of a leaf with a missing piece, and you can see the energetic pattern underneath the leaf. And I think some of you didn't see that before. I thought I'd put it in because it's just so dramatic, I think, in terms of illustrating the reality that we're speaking about. And this is this energy is the energy pattern of someone's fingerprints. And we said that Kirlian photography could actually give us diagnostic information, that Kirlian photographs of fingertips can reveal things like anger or cystic fibrosis or something like that, or they can reveal disease or emotional aspects. And so this is fingertips before and after a Reiki session. This, again, is a hand of a healer, and you can see that we can photographically illustrate something of the energy fields that emanate from and underlie our physical bodies. So you just missed a little review of what we're talking about. Perfect timing. So we're going to go more into the chakras now. So we're going to come back to the chakras. And as we said, they exist within the astral spine, and they are these vortices of subtle energies. So chakra is a Sanskrit word. It means wheel. And chakras have also been called many other things. They've called lotuses, or that's Padma in the Padmasambhava, and doors and gates and seals. And just about every mystical tradition has a way of describing these energy centers, although they don't necessarily call them chakras. You know, in the Bible, John refers to the seven candlesticks, for example, are the seven seals on the back of the Book of Life, the seven churches, all of those things. It's the same. Where they're really talking about the energy centers. That's why you see that seven repeated so often. Those are the major chakras, and we said, you know, there are minor chakras as well. And so the energy that emanates from a hand of a healer emanates from the chakra point on their palms, or their chakra points on the feet, and a lot are associated with the joints. These are some of the minor chakras, and we're really not going to talk about those today. We're going to go into the major chakras. And if you read about the chakras, which I'm sure many of you have read about the chakras or have heard about the chakras in various ways, you'll know that there are various ways that they're described. You know, chakras are experiential realities. And so there's always going to be differences in the way that they're described based on limited or enhanced, really, by the degree of the realization of the person perceiving them. So you'll get variations in that way, and you'll get variations because culturally we do describe things in various ways, but they are a reality that can be experienced and can be described and can be shared. So each of the chakras has a specific and a very unique energy structure, energetic nature, and that can be described in many ways. It can be described in terms of color, in terms of sound, in terms of geometric shape. Those are sort of the more physical attributes of the chakras. And we can work with the chakras through vibrational medicine using any one of those energy healing techniques. So each chakra, as we said before, is associated with mental states, and with specific states of spiritual awareness. And as we work through those states, we progress upwards through the chakras. And each of the chakra also is associated with a specific endocrine gland. You can see those listed here. And working with the energy of the chakra, we're also working with the associated endocrine gland. So the endocrine glands are the closest point of connection between the world of energy and the physical body. And the chakras are also associated with the different nerve plexuses. So there's the chakra, which is associated with the endocrine gland, which is associated with a nerve plexus, which is associated with a physical organ. That's sort of the way of the connection. So these are the masters in our line of gurus here at Ananda. And so Kriya Yoga is, as I think most of you know, but maybe not all of you know this, is the technique of meditation that's taught through our line of gurus. And Kriya techniques work directly with the chakras. And through Kriya Yoga, therefore, by working with the chakras, we can resolve karmic patterns of energetic imbalance that are stored in the chakras. That's one of the main techniques that we use here. So this is a whirlpool. And when we talk about the chakras, we talk about vrittis. And the word vritti means whirlpool. And it's an energy pattern in the energy field of the chakra. That's what vritti means. It's an energy pattern in the energy field of the chakra. So when you have these different vrittis or whirlpools within the chakra, they can meet with each other. And just like in a river, stronger ones can absorb weaker ones, and larger ones can absorb smaller ones. So if you had a rushing river, you would have the power to neutralize whirlpools of water. And so in that same way, if you have energy flowing upwards through your astral spine that has the power to neutralize these energy whirlpools or vrittis, which are in their spine, and that stabilizes the energy of the chakras. So when you do something like meditating at the spiritual eye, or praying, or otherwise in any way keeping God in your consciousness, you create more magnetism. And when you create magnetism, you increase the flow of the energy up through your astral spine. You bring it upwards, and you move through many of those issues we're wanting to move through. So the greater the flow of the energy, the more the vrittis are calmed. And we could also travel through the chakras up the spine with specific yoga asanas. And in our longer chakra class, we often do that. We'll spend the first hour of some of the classes traveling through the chakras through the various yoga asanas. So this is the mountain pose. And I just put it in there to illustrate that movement is always upwards. It's with reference to the third eye, which is one of the uppermost chakras. Okay, so we can travel through the chakras in many, many other ways. And in doing so, we're going to be working with the principles that we've talked about in the last few classes, which are the principles of resonance and vibrational healing. And so specific colors and sounds and asanas help us to attune to the chakras. And we can also learn to attune to the vibration of the chakras themselves. So every chakra vibrates at its own unique rate, as does every tissue and every gland in the body. And these vibrations can be detected and measured. And we talked about the work of Motoyama Sensei, for example, in Japan, who was the Japanese yogi who possibly was one of the first to measure those energies with a machine, and certainly not the first to sense them. So these chakras are sensitive to incoming information, and they also reflect energy outwards. So positive and negative mental and emotional experiences can imprint themselves in the energy field that is in the chakra, in the vrittis, and that's how the vrittis are formed. And resolutions of those experiences can help calm the vrittis. So, you know, I mean, you could work on each little vritti, but it might be just sort of much more powerful to work on bringing a flowing river upwards and sort of washing them all through that river. So I think we said this before, that the fields generated by the chakras organize the glands and the tissues that are governed by that chakra. And you might think of energies as chakras as energy transformers, really stepping down the energy of one form and frequency to a lower energy level, which guides the hormonal and physiologic and cellular changes in the physical body. So this is the autonomic nervous system. And when the energy of chakras is out of control or when the energy of chakras is out of balance, obviously the corresponding glands and nerve plexuses and organs are affected and medical conditions result. Here's kind of a wild diagram. The chakras are connected to each other and they are connected to physical cellular structure by these subtle energy channels which we call the nadis. And nadi means stream or flow. So the nadis are, that's N-A-D-I, are interwoven with the physical nervous system. And there are many, many nadis in the body, but there are a couple of major ones. And the sushumna, which is a word that you might have heard mentioned, is a major nadi. And that's the river of energy which travels the whole length of the astral spine. That's called the sushumna. And the sushumna has two main branches, and they're called the irda and the pingala nadis. And the energy flows with the breath. And so when you exhale, the energy flows down the right side of the body from the right nostril down to the root chakra. And on inhalation, energy flows up the left side through the irda nadi. And this energy channel runs from the root chakra to the left nostril. So when you're doing breath control, you're working with the flow of energies through the nadis. And you know, the pingala nadi is the channel for what we call male energy. It doesn't mean for men, but that masculine force. And its energy is hot, like the sun. It's active, it's yang. And the irda channel runs the energy of the moon, and it's cool, and it's receptive, and it's yin. So another word that you hear mentioned quite frequently with regards to the chakras and the chakra system is kundalini. And kundalini is a Sanskrit word, and it means serpent or coiled snake or serpent power. And that's the latent energy that is stored at the base of the astral spine. So when the male and female energies of the irda and pingala nadis are in balance, the kundalini shoots up the spine and it opens the chakras and it delivers the individual ultimately to union with God, which is the goal, and that's the meaning of yoga. So, you know, it can all seem quite abstract, I mean, almost like a mythological land or a fantasy or something like that when you hear this explanation, though it's quite real. And so I like this quote by Swami Kriyananda because he puts it into a practical perspective. And he says, okay, what does it mean? What it means to awaken kundalini really means every day, step by step, to get into a more positive frame of mind. So we don't really have to think too hard about this. We're just sort of giving you a foundation of what it is that we're talking about. But, you know, we need to put it into a kind of a practical reality. I wanted to put this picture in here, too. This is a medical caduceus because I think a lot of people don't realize that this is a symbol of the healing profession. And what that is based, it's the sushumna and the irda and the pingala nadis. That's what it is. That is what the caduceus is based on. This is a meditating yogi with chakras. And so when we meditate or when we do the energization exercises that we've talked about in previous classes, and when we focus, as we've said, on bringing that conscious cosmic energy in through the base of the skull, the medulla oblongata, which we call the mouth of God, we distribute energy through the chakras and through the nadis in our astral bodies, and we can thus affect our physical bodies. So each of the chakra, each of the chakras corresponds with one of the elements. So if we go from the root chakra upwards, we move from earth to water to fire to air to ether to consciousness to pure spirit. There's that movement upward through the elements. And in our bodies or on this planet, these elements can be in balance or they can be out of balance. And they interact with each other. So the outer earthly images that we see are a reflection of the energy within ourselves. And that's true not only on Earth, but in all of the universe. So as above, so below is really true. And it's true even of the movement of planets. The masters say that our collective consciousness affects the weather patterns. You might think about that in terms of the Earth changes that are happening now on this planet, and even the movement of planets. So anyone who thinks that consciousness is puny really has to think again. Even the movement of planets is affected by our consciousness. So, you know, if one wonders what one can do about climate change, I would say, first and foremost, work with your consciousness. You're likely to get a lot further than, you know, working in politics, for example. Yeah. So when you observe, you know, the elements out of balance in our world today, you know, the floods that are happening in Europe and the tornadoes and, you know, the fires and the earthquakes, and think about that is a manifestation of elements and consciousness out of balance. So everything in the world is determined by our inner energy, and that includes the faces that we wear, really, as we move from incarnation to incarnation, and including, it also includes the moment in which we were born. So the signs of the zodiac and the planets are also an outer reflection of inner reality. And you choose to incarnate, you do choose to incarnate when the celestial bodies are in a certain relationship to each other and to you. And there's this magnetic relationship that exists between that external reality and your inner reality. So every chakra has a planet which rules it, and individual planetary energies match the qualities and attitudes of the chakras. So this is Saturn, and just as an example, we talked a little bit, we had a little bit of an introduction to the root chakra, and Saturn is the planet that is associated with the root chakra, and which is also known as the earth chakra or the first chakra. And Saturn as a planet is slow moving and is also said to express our spiritual dharma or our spiritual duty in life. That would be the spiritual meaning for Saturn. So in the Yoga Sutras, Patanjali describes, and I think some of you probably taken the class in which we talk a lot about Patanjali, but he describes the behavioral rules for the spiritual path. And Saturn is related to what we call the constricting principles of the yamas, to loyalty to the principles of the yamas. So this would be non-injury and non-lying and non-stealing and what else? Non-greed and non-sensuality. And that's related to Saturn, and it's related to the root chakra, which is the earth chakra. So the more the energy of the earth chakra is directed upwards, the more a person develops the power to follow the rules of yama or control on the spiritual path. So it's always working in that way. And so there's a golden key. And that key is that there is always needs to be an upward focus for you to progress on the path, whether it's your outward path in the physical world or your upward path as you move through energetically through the patterns of the chakras. So I put this on. This is Yogananda and his guru, Sri Yukteswar, just to say that even an enlightened master has an upward focus. Even master had a master. And that's why they're there. These are Patanjali's rules, behavior rules of the spiritual path. And so we're working through the issues that are associated with each chakra, even as we work through these rules. So the first chakra is called Muladhara Chakra. And the Muladhara Chakra means root or base. So this chakra is also called the root chakra, or the coccyx chakra by its location, the coccyx center by its location at the coccyx. And this chakra is about rootedness or security or loyalty. And so you can see that in this picture where you've got that tree that's rooted down into the earth and you see the red circle, which is the chakra, because the color of this chakra, of course, is red. And so there are questions that come to mind when you think about this chakra. And, you know, we'll go through a lot of this information. I'm going to tell you at the bookstore, I believe we have a book by, a workbook with, by Savitri Simpson, who has written many of the questions that are associated with the different chakras and ways that you can work through the chakras. So we're just, this is just like a little taste of it as we're moving very quickly through these chakras tonight. But the questions that come to mind are, you know, wherein does your security lie? And to what are you loyal? And do you identify with yourself as a physical body, or is your identity one with infinite spirit? These would be root chakra questions that you could ask. And then we've sort of briefly mentioned affirmations, and certainly there are affirmations that you could use that go along with each chakra. So two of the affirmations that you might use for this chakra, my mind is firm and steadfast as a rock. I am steadfast, determined, unshakably loyal to the truth. I endure and accept all things with calm faith in God. In many ways that you can work with it. I was working with a very ungrounded patient once, and she was a painter. And so she was painting, and she had painted this picture, and she was just sort of basically in the middle of a river, and there was nothing there to ground her. And she did a series of paintings. It was so fascinating because then she put a rock in the middle of the river, and then she put herself on the rock, and you know, just she became more and more grounded as she worked with the issue in the way that she could, which was by painting, because she was an artist. So, you know, there's no right or wrong way to do it. You work with your own affinities, and you can. There are many, many ways to work through the chakras. This is the second chakra. It's called the Svadhisthana chakra. It's governed by the planet Jupiter. And it is associated with the niyamas. So we had the yamas, now we have the niyamas. It is the water chakra. So we've moved from red, and I just had to put these orchids in here. This is a orchid which is called, it's a bulbophyllum orchid, if anyone is into orchids there, which is called the base regulator. And, you know, We talk a lot about flower essences and colors and that sort of thing. Well, orchid essences are somehow particularly suited towards working with the issues of the chakras. So this is the essence of this flower is used to balance the root chakra. So we go from red to orange, and this is an orchid named Love's Secret that's used to balance the sacral chakra. There are many other essences that you could use. But we've also moved from earth of the first chakra to water of the second chakra. So the other thing about these chakras is that these energy centers, they're independent with each other. They don't exist apart from each other. They're interdependent. So earth needs water, and water needs earth. So without water, the earth is quite rigid, and it doesn't have any capacity to adapt or to be creative. And without form, the water has no identity. So with form, it can be shaped into a waterfall or a wave or a whirlpool, but it is interdependent with the chakras below and above it. So the form of water is determined by what it is in relationship to, right? So questions for this chakra are really, with what reality are you in relationship? What do you relate to? You know, do you orient to the earth, or do you orient to a higher reality? And each chakra is always in relationship in every way to what is above and to what is below. And as I said, the key is upward focus. Now, this might or might not work. Let's see if this works. This is Yogananda, of course.
That is my Christmas present to you.
Yes, good.
I bow to you all who is linked in my Father and Christ and the great Babaji Lahari Mata.
So that's a good second chakra affirmation. I, a tiny bubble of laughter, have become the sea of mirth itself. So I said, as I was saying, this is the Svadhisthana chakra. And the Sva of Svadhisthana means vital force or soul, and Adhisthana means the seat or abode. So Svadhisthana is the abode or seat of the vital force or the soul. So we say that the Kundalini resides in the root chakra, but it originates from the sacral chakra, and that's why that's the seat that's called the seat of the soul. So we talked previously about the water in our bodies, and we said that we are that the human being is a large percentage water, and the water chakra governs issues with any of the body fluids, of course, whether it's blood or whether it's lymph or all the juices and all the water functions in the body. So this chakra governs thirst and dehydration and swelling and pelvic and lower back tension and sexual difficulties and not so obviously problems with the soles of the feet, because the sub-chakra of the water chakra is on the soles of the feet. So a lot of works with a lot of things. And the water world's a world of emotions. And in this water world, there's a tension between flexibility and the inability to take a stand. And so open-mindedness and wishy-washiness. So there's a spectrum on each issue. And I really like this picture of Swami Kriyananda, because it really looks like a balanced Svadhisthana chakra to me, coming from this upward orientation. And the qualities would be fluidity and creativity and intuition and joy and a sense of renewal. And the chant might be, I am the bubble, make me the sea. That would be a chant that you could use if you were trying to strengthen the energy of that particular chakra. There's a Yogananda bubble. Okay, so now we're at the third chakra, and the third chakra is called the navel chakra or the Manipura chakra. The color is yellow for the Manipura chakra. The element is fire. And that this chakra is the last of the lower chakras, so all three of which are very strongly connected to the material plane. And it's here that we're connected to the material world at birth via the umbilical cord. That's the connection. And the third chakra is governed by the planet Mars. And you might know that Mars is called the fiery planet, and Mars is the Roman god of war. And so Mars used power to secure peace. That's what he did. And that is power applied to achieve an ideal power with an upward focus. And if we look within our tradition, then we talk about Arjuna. And Arjuna is the spiritual warrior. And he's kind of the perfect representation of the third chakra. And he represents focused willpower and doing battle with the rampant impulses. And again, Krishna is Arjuna's partner in battle. And so Krishna's Arjuna's reference point for right action. And so again, you have the key being that upward orientation. A couple weeks ago, Shanti brought up this wonderful quotation, the greater the will, the greater the flow of energy. And it is perfect for this chakra. Because this chakra is about energy and willpower and fiery self-determination. And the firewalk could be one symbolic action for this chakra. Anybody ever done that, the firewalk? No? I did. I can say it requires determination. One point in this. Courage, yeah. Yeah. I don't know, you know, the leader of the seminar was not a very impressive guy, and I just said, if he can do it, I can do it. Huh? No. No, not at all. Stunningly. I just found that picture recently. If I had had time, I would have photographed to put myself in there. So this is gold. And as a gem essence, we talked about those two a little bit, I think. They're a little bit like the flower essences. But the essence of gold brings strength and balance to the third chakra. So it can help you tap into your inner truth and joy and wisdom as a source of creative power. This is the, for those of you that do yoga, this is the warrior pose, Virabhadrasana 1. And this is a pose that's useful for this chakra. And the third chakra is associated with the third stage of Patanjali's Eightfold Path, which is asana, which means posture. So this pose really represents the battle with self-ignorance. That's what this is. So the fire of the fire chakra needs the stability of the earth, which is, you know, the first chakra, and the flowing quality of the water element. Otherwise, it can manifest as destruction and ruthlessness. So again, it always has to be balanced. This is another Bulbophyllum orchid. This is called Hara to Heart. And the essence of this orchid is used to direct the energy of the second and third chakras up to the heart. And fire chakra is about transformation on all levels. So the fire ceremony, this is a very old picture of Swami Kriyananda, epitomizes that transformation. So then we move upwards to the fourth chakra, which is the Anahata chakra. And this is the green chakra. Here's green, yeah. And Anahata means clean or stainless or the well of unstruck sound. So that's the inner sound. That's the sound of one hand clapping. That's the sound of Om. So these are some of the associations with the Anahata chakra. Green connection, growth. And this chakra is ruled by Vayu, which is the Hindu god of wind. And prana is a symbol for Vayu. There's prana. And prana means, as we said, energy or breath or life force. And in Patanjali's Eightfold Path, the heart chakra is associated with pranayama. So we just moved up to pranayama. And so given that we're talking about breath and given the location of this chakra, you might imagine that this chakra relates to the heart and to the lungs. And it also relates to the diaphragm and to the arms and to the hands. So if you squeeze your shoulder blades together to experience the location of that chakra, which you can feel the organs in the body parts that are associated with that chakra. So that's one way to sort of locate the chakra within your body. So the air chakra is the first of the three higher chakras. So the energy of this chakra can pull the energy of the higher chakras down, or it could lift the energy of the lower chakras up. And it's the balance point, really, between divine liberation and further involvement in delusion. So air really is about a sense of kinship or connection with life in all of its manifestation. It's a kind of a universal but not an apathetic love that you get with that chakra. And that chakra is associated, is governed by the planet Venus and the goddess of love. So when air is directed downwards through the lower elements, you get these likes and dislikes. And that's the likes and dislikes are really what separate us from each other. That's what puts us into bondage, one of the things. And one of the flower essence, you know, is just so obvious for this chakra is this flower, which is called the bleeding heart. And this essence helps to stabilize the heart chakra. And if you have a stabilized heart chakra, then you might say you might be free from likes and dislikes or free from prejudice, fired with enthusiasm from the lower elements, offered into a divine vision that would be balanced with this in this chakra. So love and compassion and expansion would all be qualities of the balanced heart chakra. Another orchid. I just had to put the orchids in this time. So this is called Golden Radiance. It's a essence that's used to help open the heart chakra and encourage the heart chakra energy to move upwards to the next chakra, which is the Vishuddha chakra or the throat chakra. This is a cervical center. And Vishuddha means pure wisdom. And this is a chakra of calmness and of expansion and of wisdom. So the throat chakra is the gateway to the spiritual aspect of man. And it's a bridge between the brain and the rest of the body, and the color is blue. So in this chakra, we move from the air element to ether, which is rather more difficult to portray. But ether is this invisible cosmic energy out of which the physical universe appears. And so in physics, ether is understood to be the medium that fills all unoccupied space. That's what ether is. And it transmits, by the way, electromagnetic radiation. So when we've talked about the influence of electromagnetic radiation on the body, you could think of that. So this is called the necklace of beauty, which is used another bulbophyllum really that connects the heart chakra with the throat chakra. The essence is used for that, and there's a feeling of selfless divine love from the heart center that enlightens the quality of wisdom that's found in this chakra. And when this chakra is imbalanced, a person can be bored or apathetic, and instead of calmness, the person might be sort of restlessly involved in the world, and then the person could be described as mercurial. And Mercury is both the god and the planet associated with this chakra. The throat chakra is about communication, of course. You know, it's the thyroid gland. It's your voice. It's how we express ourselves, whether with our thoughts or with our voices, in whatever way we express ourselves. So if we look back to Patanjali, where we've moved from yama to niyama to asana to pranayama, and we're now at something called pratyahara, which means withdrawal of the senses. And this is withdrawal from attachment to external objects. So this is a color therapy for this chakra. Honestly, if you wrap a blue scarf around your neck or wear blue around your neck, it is one way to work with this chakra. It's certainly one way to work with the thyroid gland if your thyroid gland's out of balance. I won't follow that thought. Okay. So there's an image of stars. So you can promote the feeling of the throat chakra through calmly expanding your mind, through activities like stargazing, you know, or contemplation of space or infinity. And one of the chants for this chakra could be the chant, I am the sky, Mother, I am the sky. Or you might use an affirmation, free at last, my spirit soars into infinite skies of bliss. You don't need to write all these down, because if you look at Savitri's workshop, you know, she's outlined much of this for you, and so you can refer to that. So we're now at the sixth chakra, which is the third eye chakra, or the brow chakra, or the ajna chakra. And the the Ajna chakra is symbolized by a lotus with two petals. And they represent, guess what, the Irda and the Pingala, those two major nadis, which meet here, meet in that central Sushumna nadi before rising upwards to the crown chakra. And that meeting signals the end of duality. So that's another meaning that it has. And these petals also represent both the pineal and the pituitary glands. So the pituitary gland is the master endocrine gland. That's the gland that sends regulatory messages to all of the other glands, and it is known as the seat of the mind. And the pineal gland is the seat of intuition and cosmic consciousness. So the pineal gland is to the pituitary gland as intuition is to reason. So we have both intuition and reason there. And the joining of the essences of the pituitary and pineal glands opens the third eye. So in this chakra, sure? I might not be able to answer, but go ahead and ask. I said that pineal gland, intuition, and pituitary gland, reason. Well, as I said, you know, all of the chakras are related one to another, so it's coming together here, but anything goes immediately up. Anything is directed upwards. In terms of it being received in the heart, I don't know. You know, symbolically speaking, that's probably true as well. You know, another way to describe what it is that's happening. Yeah. So there are many dualities coming together in this chakra. And the sun and the moon, and the Irda and the Pingala, the solar and the lunar energies. Here we are again. And there are two poles, and they're located at the third eye and at the medulla. And we've talked about that. This, the negative pole is the mouth of God or the entry point of prana. And then there's the positive pole. And if we go to Patanjali again, the negative center is the center of what's called dharana, which means self-offering. And when that center is developed, we see selfless service and divine surrender versus ego involvement. And the positive center is the center of dhyana. And dhyana means divine joy or enlightenment. So positive qualities would be attunement, radiation, radiant joy, solution consciousness, that sort of thing. So the positive center is located at the point between the eyebrows, which is also called the Christ center, or the third eye. So in this balanced Ajna center, there's this perfect attunement and this serviceful surrender to a divine will. And so we started this chakra with this journey, this beautiful path, this journey that began with the dense vibrational elements that represent the energies of the lower chakras, the earth and the water and the fire, and with the corresponded issues associated with the balance or imbalance of those elements. And then we then moved to air and to ether, and now further into super ether. And this is the last point of individualized differentiation of spirit. So the sixth chakra is the inner doorway to the seventh chakra, which is the crown chakra. It's also called the thousand-petaled lotus, where there's union with God. So that seventh chakra is located at the crown of the head. It's called the Sahasrara chakra, which means thousand-petaled lotus. And that would be where the journey ends. And the words of the poem Samadhi, which are not lit up now, but are along the church walls, and you can just vaguely see them here, but you may have seen them before, they describe the end of the journey. They describe samadhi, samadhi consciousness. And you can find this poster maybe at the back of the church or something like it, and in the boutique as well, and it has the words of samadhi on it. And you can also find the words of the poem Samadhi and Whispers from Eternity and many of the other books that we have. We want to try this now, and we'll have a little experience here of hopefully of moving through the chakras. You can just really feel it through that. And I And I cannot take credit for that. That was put together by Barry, whom some of you know. It's just a really beautiful way of moving in yourself through the chakras. So that is, in a real nutshell, a journey through the chakras, and you can see that there's just so much that you could say and do and feel through these chakras. And I think it can be a little overwhelming when you first hear all of that, but in the next hour after dinner, Shanti's going to be, I think, putting it in a little more words around it and a little more of a practical perspective on it that'll give you more depth. And I'm sure at some point we'll rerun the chakras class where we'll go through each chakra much more slowly and really spend time experiencing each chakra in a multitude of different ways and talking about it and working with it. But that's all for today, for before dinner. So, yeah. How are they determined? It is experiential. So they're not really determined by anyone, but they're a reality that people experience and share. As we said, you know, they're vibrationally connected with the vibration of the color. So it's a real connection. It isn't something that I generally personally experience. I've had a little experience of it, but it's an inner reality and a vibrational reality. So nobody sort of made it up. It's a matter of vibration. Huh? Yes, it can be measured. Yes, the vibration. Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, these are vibrational realities. And that's, you know, as we looked, particularly, I think Motoyama-sensei over in Japan was one of the people who was one of the first whose work became known and who measured it with what you might call a scientific device, but certainly mystics and clairvoyants all over the world and throughout time have experienced the vibrational reality of the chakras. Because I was trying to put it into an hour. So we touched on that last week a little bit, but actually, when we do the longer slideshows, we actually play sounds for different chakras, and we also have a class in which there's chanting through the chakras. I mentioned that last week, too, because we mentioned it last time, I sort of left it out this time, but I mean, really, I left out a lot this time. I'm just trying to pick out little examples and little aspects of things from the different chakras so that you could know sort of the kinds of things that are involved. But really, in an hour, there's not only so much you can do. Okay, I don't know where it came from. It was an image that captured my attention and that just seemed to so perfectly illustrate the fact that even an enlightened master sails with a upward focus. It's amazing what you can find on the internet, really, when you're trying to illustrate, you know, illustrate in pictures these kinds of points that we're trying to talk about. You know, I think it just gives you a way to hold it, because it's hard to hold all of this information. You know, it's so different than the way that we're trained to think, and it's a reality that, you know, many of us, you know, we certainly didn't grow up knowing about this reality. We knew about, you know, the foot bone connected to the ankle bone kind of thing, but this is a very different kind of connection of the energy centers and the nadis and, you know, all of those kinds of things. So, you know, the purpose of really of all these slides is just to give you, you know, some way to conceptualize it, that, you know, often images will just stay in your mind and hold a reality for you that's very hard to describe in words, because we are talking about a non-physical reality. And so how do you describe, you know, a taste that you've never tasted, or a color that you've never seen, or sound to a deaf man? I mean, what do you say? You know, you just have to try to find ways, you know, to give hints of those realities.
All right. As Connie said to you, you know, I mean, Cliff Notes don't even quite say it. The chakras are something that you just keep learning about and, you know, hearing about. And it's like anything really in life. certainly, but even on our spiritual path, I would say particularly, which is why I said it's a shame that some of the people who've been around a long time don't come to some of these classes, because wherever we are spiritually, we hear with those ears. And hopefully for all of us, it's different. We hope that we grow so that if we heard this same talk even next week, we would be able to garner a different experience from it. And that is the way it is with the chakras. I remember one of my friends who's been with Ananda for a long time, the first time I was ever going to teach a chakra class, which was a long time ago, she just started giggling. Good thing I didn't know why she was laughing. I mean, the chakras are absolutely, at the very core, literally, they're at the core of the spiritual path. There's nothing you can do on the spiritual path that doesn't involve the chakras. In fact, even if you don't know you're on a spiritual path, there's nothing you can do that doesn't involve the chakras. So there's that. But still, I mean, so it's perfect in a way that you get to hear a couple of hours, and then every class will talk a little bit about it. Next month we're doing those 8 manifestations of divine energy, 4 classes, 2 topics each night, where we talk about what would pure divine energy look like. What does it look like when it's light, when it's sound, when it's peace, when it's calmness, when it's joy, and on and on. There will be many different speakers in that class, but we'll all have to be talking about the chakras. You can't talk about love and not mention the heart chakra. So the more times you come, the more you keep hearing things, and it's just a building, an experience of building blocks, but that's what we're all doing all the time in life. So always on Wednesday, yeah, and I'll talk more about it next week, but we just keep going with these Wednesday night series, so because it's a nice habit to get into. That's what I told those of you who took Raja Yoga when I came the last class. It's a nice, you put aside at least one night of the week, for many of you I know it's more, where you're just engaged in satsang. And it's a wonderful thing to do, as Connie was saying, and I'm going to say it. You know, the whole goal of the spiritual path, the entire goal of the spiritual path, is to move the focus of our energy from the medulla to the spiritual eye. Now, we say from the medulla because, and I think I said this the first week, but I'm going to repeat it because it's important to pick up a flow here. When the ovum and the sperm unite, the very first cells of the body that are formed are the medulla. And from there, sends out a lot of our nervous system develops, and then other parts of our body develop. But the minute that the sperm and ovum unite, and there's that flash of light that goes out, and a soul, some soul, and there's a lot that I've heard about this, I can't say I know it from experience, but the souls who are drawn to be born into that family, really, why? Because of exactly what's going on in their chakras. It's exactly their karma, and they're magnetized, and I'll talk a little bit more about this, to certain places to come in the world. And it's not just one place for one soul. There's often a lot of souls that would like to come in, but one gets in. Sometimes, as we know, 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 get in, but usually one does. And the instant that happens, we become, we have an ego. Master says the ego is the soul identified with the body. So immediately, literally, immediately there is ego consciousness, not any longer soul consciousness. And it really doesn't seem right, does it, that the whole journey after that has to try to get back where you were anyway. But hopefully we're making a little progress. Now, just parenthetically, I'm going to say that I got into that topic. It's right where I want to be, but I wanted to finish a thought before, which may not come to me right now, when I was saying about classes and why to take them and what they do. Anytime you're here, anytime you're in good spiritual company, anytime you're chanting, anytime you're listening to these talks, you're helping yourself move on that journey, that whole journey to get from here to here. So it is a wonderful thing to do for that reason. Now, there is that, I don't know what the right word is. Let me think. I want to say that piece of the soul, that piece of infinite consciousness that becomes you, that stays throughout your entire incarnations at a soul level, is called a jiva. So that's the soul part of it. So that jiva can be in this body, it'll be in a different body next life, and many different bodies as it goes. But that soul, that soul part remains you, and it carries a lot of characteristics of you from one life to another. So even though we take on different bodies, were we able to remember life to life, or was Connie able to remember who we were in our last life together, because we know we've had many lives together, she would say right away, oh yeah, I recognize you. I mean, Brian said tonight when we were over there, Connie was asking him if he knew me, and Brian and I have probably talked twice before this at Sunday services, but we both had that feeling that we've all had many times. And he said, oh, I just feel like I've known Shanti forever. And I said, well, we probably have. Probably more lifetimes than we'd like to remember, but, you know, you just can feel it. There's something familiar. We recognize it in each other. And every once in a while, we have those deja vu, or, you know, every once in a while, I almost feel like I'm a caricature of myself to myself. You know, it's like I'm getting too good of a view, but it's not that logical. And I think it's just a memory that comes through, so that we start realizing that it's the same consciousness moving on, but again, hopefully, not just expanding and evolving, but really doing just what Connie was talking about. Every single thing that we do has an effect on these chakras, these energy centers. They literally are, as she showed you beautiful pictures, I don't have to go through all of that, but they're real. You see, just because we can't see them makes them no less real, which we've talked a lot about before. And it's very hard. This is a very hard piece of work that we have to do, to expand our consciousness and imagine that the physical realities that we see are the most contracted part of our consciousness. We think these bodies are great. And, you know, we think, as I tease, but I'm not teasing, just because I spent so many years at Stanford with the great minds. I heard this thing today, just actually driving back over here from the farm, that they've done a study and they've ranked all the universities in the world. And so everybody was real proud because California took second and third place. Of the best universities, Stanford was second and UC Berkeley was third, which is interesting. Of course, Harvard was first, the ongoing battle. But, you know, because I spent so many years at Stanford, where there are a lot of great minds, and it's very easy to start thinking, and it's true. I mean, I don't want to try and negate it. It's great to have a great mind, but even the greatest of minds is so contracted compared to our potential. And so I've been saying in these classes, you know, our whole goal is to get out of our minds. Literally, to lose our minds. That's what we want to do. But, as Connie also alluded to before, you can't hold those thoughts. Very often you say these words, remember that you're one with God, go beyond mind, all these things. They don't mean anything to anybody until you've had an experience of it. They're just words. What does that mean, one with God? From a logical point of view, it just can't make any sense. You can't make it make sense in your mind. The instant you have an experience of it, nobody's ever going to talk you out of it. But they're not things that we can necessarily logically talk somebody into. It's a very interesting thing about the spiritual path. I just have always prayed, as I've been teaching for all these years through Ananda, let it just be magnetic enough. Let the masters be speaking through me enough that even if people want to go, what is she talking about? The curiosity just draws them in because there's something they're sensing. Even though I always know the words don't do it. That's not what it is. But we have to use those words. We have to communicate that way. So that's where we are. The whole reason we're here is to take this journey that we're taking. And, you know, like this, just like the Kundalini, just like you saw the pictures. Connie made a statement when she started talking that she said, we are infinite energy, and we are, but we really have to hold on to the fact that we are manifested from that energy. We actually are born of that energy, and it matters when we're trying to understand the chakras. The chakras are, they are a spiritual blueprint for us that lasts life after life after life with adjustments each time. The blueprint changes. It's sort of like the chakras are the physiology of our spiritual life. That really is what they are for us. We cannot have a thought, an action, anything happen to us, certainly anything we put out in the world, nothing can happen that isn't being determined by the energy as it flows through our chakras and isn't at the same time affecting our chakras. It's virtually impossible because it's all energy and it's all connected. It's only disconnected in our minds right now from what we're talking about. But as soon as we can transcend mind, any single thing that we do, that's why it's so important that we come here Wednesday nights. That's why it's so important that we listen to right music. And it doesn't matter for a minute what we would like to be, what we wish we were. You know, gee, I'd really wish I didn't know so much fear. Or I so don't want to be somebody who judges people. But the reality of my spiritual life is the reality. Am I afraid? Am I judging people? So the truth about what's going on is the truth. You know, there's that saying in the Bible, God is not mocked. And really, this is what it means. It means we have to get self-honesty is so meaningful on the spiritual path, to just be willing and able to look and see where you are so that you can take your very own next step. Because, you know, we hear all the time about how fingerprints, there's no two fingerprints that are alike. There are no two sets of chakras that are alike. You can't live anybody else's reality, and nobody can live yours. This is the incredible fallacy of the way most of us live whenever we think that we know how things should be for anybody else. You know, we're all living in a certain amount of delusion. We're all living in this duality, some degree of separateness. What difference does it make if somebody else's delusion is different than yours? It really doesn't matter. So we can only help to be there as an energetic force to allow people to grow, provide a safe place, be as unconditionally loving as we can, bear witness, which is so powerful. There are many ways that we can help people, but we can never help anybody by thinking we know exactly what their path should look like because we have no idea. We can say that it's good for anybody. It's always good to be in good spiritual company. It's always good to listen to inspired music because any single thing that we do that has an upward energy, anything is good for us. And it doesn't matter how far it takes us. We can be sure, again, because remember, it's energy, it's magnetic. So it's pulling this energy in, you know, we keep saying up, and it's because we're sort of standing on 2 feet. I want to be very clear. There's nothing so linear here. It's not like you stand still, you get your first chakra completely balanced, flowing, in order, whatever word you want to use. There aren't really any words. And then when your whole first chakra is set, then you go to work on your second chakra. It's not like that. It's virtually impossible. What is true is that you cannot be a completely balanced, centered, uplifted person if your first chakra is imbalanced. And we'll talk a little bit about it. Connie started to mention it, but we'll go through how might you know. Because if you get to know the chakras well enough, you know, it's just like practicing medicine for years. I can walk into a room full of people and just in a heartbeat have an idea of certain medical things that are going on with people. Usually I don't say anything, but every once in a while I have to say to somebody, have you had your thyroid checked? Or, did you know that you have, you know, this mold that should be looked at? Or, I mean, it happens in so many ways. It's a sixth sense that you get when you've been doing it for a while. Same thing's true with the chakras. You start getting to know them. You start getting to understand the language of the chakras. And you pay attention to yourself. You can actually almost read them. And you begin to know, you know, what is that system of understanding who and how people are that goes by numbers? Oh, I'm a 3, I'm a 6. The Enneagram, right. And people walk around telling you what numbers they are. And actually, I've had people tell me what I am, and pretty much they're right. It sounds right to me when they say it. I don't study it. But it's like that. I mean, because these systems that are devised around energy, if you get quiet enough and still enough and honest enough, then you can begin to know. And it matters a lot because we know that we can influence the chakras. And it almost doesn't matter when we're thinking about these to figure out what's wrong. That's not always very helpful. On the spiritual path, it's often specifically not helpful. What is helpful is just to start doing, behaving in dharmic ways, doing what's right, doing what's good. No sense in trying to figure out what's wrong, because you'll get one thing figured out, maybe. Doesn't even mean you can change it. Probably everybody's had this experience. I know I've had it, unfortunately, over and over, where you have a personality thing, whatever it is. Again, maybe it's a fear of something, or maybe you feel rejected easily, or who knows. And you really work on it and work on it, and you absolutely are sure, that's not there for me anymore, that's not going to bother me. Then you have an experience in life, and I've said to myself, oh my God, where did that come from? I was so sure I was healed in that way. Very, very hard to heal one aspect of ourself after another, after another, after another. It already takes us millions of lifetimes. It would be that many more lifetimes. What is much easier is for us to put the magnet in the right place, to just start moving energy, doing things that move energy, and then do what we can to direct that energy in a positive way. Because, you know, in each chakra, it's like a lotus. That's why they're called lotuses. And as they, you know, there's no quite great English word for it, but as they're balanced, as they're opened so that energy can flow, it's just like this, and energy really can flow. So who cares what was wrong there for the last 10 lifetimes? What difference does it make? What matters a lot is the direction that we're moving in and how much energy and willpower we bring to it. If you imagine a river, which is a lot of how we liken the Sushumna and the chakras, we talk about these little currents on the side of a river. You know, and water gets over here and it gets stuck in twigs and rocks and just spins around and around, and you can watch it sometimes. A bug will get stuck in there or something. Well, if you opened a dam at the top of the river and you let energy flow, a lot of energy, in this case in the form of water, it draws those things in that were stuck on the side. They can be stuck there for a long time, but it draws it in and it moves it. And that's the same way we are. If we start applying a lot of energy to moving in the right direction, it doesn't mean, I will do this, I will do that. It doesn't mean with that kind of energy. It means this. It means showing up at classes. It means coming to church on Sundays. It means more and more associating with like-spirited people. You know, it means, as Yogananda said, smile, you know, lift your face up in the mirror. All these things that say yes. You know, I have very little art in my home that doesn't have to do with the spiritual path. I can appreciate art, but I'm actually really not interested. I'm not that interested in having too many things in my house anyway. But mostly I want them to be pictures of the masters or a picture that Joe Tisch painted. But I have two things in the house that have nothing to do in that way. One is a wooden figure of a woman with wild hair like mine used to be. I mean, a real afro, and she's just there like this, and she's painted so beautifully. And every time I look at her, I feel like, yes, that's exactly yes, that's perfect. It makes me feel that way. So I've let her stay with me. And another piece that just does the same thing for me, but it's a good energy, even though it's not quote-unquote spiritual art, because that's what I want to keep feeling. That's where I want to keep moving. What makes us spiritual is not necessarily where our life is right now. It's not necessarily how much we think we have together. What makes us spiritual is the direction we're heading in, how we choose to solve our problems. Do we see problems as obstacles and get stuck? Or as Master said, do we see more and more everything as an opportunity for spiritual growth? Because this is the truth. Everything that happens in life is an opportunity for great spiritual growth. From the most simple things to the most horrendous things. What matters is how we choose to use it. We had a meeting a couple weeks ago at my house, and I said to somebody, we were having not this discussion, but a similar, I said, what's that term that they say in fights, you know, when there's a fight, I mean in the ring, a real professional fight, if whatever that means. Sounds like an oxymoron to me, a professional fight, but anyway, they have them, I guess. And you say break clean? You say break clean or something? The referee? Oh, it's wonderful. Nobody in here even knows, but there's a term. I love that. Yay! I think it's called break clean, and when the referee says that, you just have to get off the guy that you're choking to death or whatever. They look like that's what they're doing. And somebody in the meeting said, yes, you're right. Our new term ought to be break yes. It was so nice. It's like, where do you fall when you go to, when you have a hard decision to make, when something's really rough is going on? This is really what tells us about where we are in our spiritual path. It doesn't matter what's happening. The thing of it doesn't matter at all. We have no idea what the real meaning of most of the things that are going on in our lives are. We try and guess, and we think, oh, maybe I'm going through this because of this or that. But really, we almost never get it right. And usually, by a year or 5 or 10 down the road, we look back and we see, wow, if that hadn't happened, this wouldn't have happened, this, that. And, you know, it's just so interesting how that happens. It doesn't matter whether we particularly, in terms of the outside world, win or lose in any particular moment. What really matters is our attitude. The spiritual path has so much to do, it really all boils down to attitude. But it's direction, it's our intention, and it is right attitude. It means literally breaking yes. That you, and at the end, you're going to come up and say, yes, okay, I will. What do? We don't sit there and feel victimized or, you know, why did this have to happen to me? We're really moving in the right direction when we can say, why is this happening to me? And, you know, it's easier in some moments than in others, no matter where we are on this path. The very fact that we're still in these bodies says we're not getting it right 100% of the time. But really, who cares in a way? I want to just review for us what happens after that moment when the ovum and the egg meet from there, because prior to that, we were living in some, I don't know if ethereal means the same as ether, but it almost sounds like it. I don't think really that they actually mean the same place, but in some expansive space when we're taking on a new life, we go from this state of ether, of living more with space. And Master said an interesting thing about this. He said, the way we think of space in this country he was talking about is as if nothing is there. But he really wanted to make it clear, space is energy. It's just energy that we can't exactly see in the same way or feel, so we think of it as being nothing. But it's important, of course, because we're coming from that energy. And just like Connie was talking, mostly she spoke about this ascending route of the chakras. But what happens when we're born is we first have to go from ether to air to fire, to liquid to solid to matter. That's what happens. And then when we're in that place of matter, of physical world, this becomes our reality. This is what we think is actually what reality is everything that we see. So most of us have been walking around like that. Now, once we start moving through these chakras, we just have to turn the trip around. We just literally have to make a U-turn and come back up. Well, we have to do it in a way that we're trying consciously to be, that we're being conscious, that we're on the positive, which means expansive, which means growth-producing side of the chakra. So, as she said, the first chakra, which is about groundedness, it's about steadfastness, it's about saying, I know where I am in the world, I know what's important to me. Master said that one of the most important qualities on the spiritual path is loyalty. This is where we develop a sense of loyalty. It's not easy. You know, every week people come to me or write to me, every week, I mean, of course, I'm a little out there. I mean, I'm easily accessible. But people tell me, you have to watch this video. You're going to love this video. As somebody came up to me last week, oh, I just went to hear Adya Shanti. You've got to go with me, Shanti. I really think you'll love him. And I feel like, I'm sure I would love him. He's speaking the truth. I know that. But I don't want to go anywhere else. Why would I go anywhere else? I'm not going to hear anything else. They're my vibrations here. So it's not that people have to do that before they're ready. But when you watch people who for 20, 30, 40 years trying this path, trying that path, trying this path, they're not solid. They're not steadfast. They haven't yet developed that loyalty. This is just to a spiritual path. But we're talking about these qualities throughout all of life. Do we know what we want to do? Can we stick to things? Are we loyal with our friends, with our family? And loyalty doesn't always mean that you stand still even for the worst of it. That's the point. None of this means, the words don't mean what we think they mean in the world. We're talking about spiritual qualities now. And as Connie kept saying, we're talking about these qualities that are then directed towards spiritual growth, towards attunement. I'm probably not able to answer that. I've never even heard that about Sri Yukteswar. But I will say to you about Master, that's very interesting, is that Master, there's a big question about whether Master was Arjuna. And Arjuna, in the Gita, really represents, you know, each of the Pandava brothers in the Bhagavad Gita represents one of these first five chakras. And it's essential to the telling of that story. That's not where I want to go tonight, because that's a whole other eight-week class or lifelong class, really, on the Gita. But it does matter, and it really matters when we're talking about it here with Arjuna. And so I didn't know, I've never heard specifically that Master was, but I know that Master was Arjuna, and Arjuna was the third chakra, and it was so important because, I just jump ahead of myself, it's fine because we're talking about it. The third chakra represents as fire, that's the element. And fire, as you know, we call it purifying, but it literally burns things up so that they transform their form. They go from solid to air very often, or to another form. It's a very, very meaningful moment in our spiritual development as we are feeling ourselves work through third chakra issues, because it's the time where we're moving further away from, in an obvious form, this physical reality. Otherwise, we're talking about earth, then we're talking about water. Now we're talking about spiritual qualities about them, of course. We're talking about groundedness, earth, matter, you know, solidity. That's what we're talking about. When we talk about water, we're talking about water can change form in a way that earth cannot. So it's always a progression. We're moving in a the positive direction. But when you get to fire, and fire burns things up, you can't even tell what form it was before. So it's an essential step on our spiritual development. And I know many of you have heard this. I think I even spoke briefly about it in this class a week or two ago. But at that point in the Bhagavad Gita where Arjuna looks at Krishna and says, I don't want to kill my cousins, because that's the battle. The battle is really taking place in our spine, in these chakras. The whole Gita that's happening, we're reading the story about there, out there, but the allegory means it's happening in our spine. We're moving and we are purifying and we're literally changing form. We have to allow ourselves to let go of those qualities that are holding us too firmly in this physical body, in this physical reality. We've got to transform or spiritually we're dead. We cannot move spiritually. So Krishna looks at Arjuna, who's the third chakra, where things need to become purified, and that representation of the third chakra is saying to God, I don't want to do this. I don't want to kill these people. Meaning, I don't really want to have to let go of all that. Can't I just like let go of a little and hold on to the rest? I mean, okay, I'll come to church every Sunday, and I might even come to kirtan on Friday night, but wait a minute, are you telling me that I can't really be attached to my gorgeous car and all my shoes? My, you know, like, how much do I have to let go of? And Krishna's basically saying to Arjuna, your life depends on it. And he says, not only does your life depend on it, but because Arjuna represents all of us, he's called disciple every man. And remember, this is third chakra. Krishna says to him, everybody's life depends on your doing this. Because Arjuna had thrown down his bow and said, I won't kill. And Krishna said, if you do that, nothing can live, meaning nothing can grow. Nobody can evolve. You've got to take care of this because he's us. So God was just speaking to every one of us and saying, if you don't have the courage to move through this purification, you're dead. You're just not going to make any spiritual progress, which is, of course, the whole point of life, and it was the whole point of Krishna's teaching. So, and Master, if you look at Master, as many of you heard me say last Sunday in church, this is quite a path that we've come on to. That man accomplished more in a lifetime than, you know, most of us could hope to accomplish in thousands of lifetimes. And interestingly, he came out of a lineage where there was not that kind of activity. You know, Babaji sort of hanging out in the caves in the Himalaya. And, you know, Sri Yukteswar had a very small group of disciples. He was hard. He was a hard guru to have, hard to be with. And interestingly, through that lineage, and even if you look at Lahiri's life, I mean, he was an accountant. He had a family. But he was living a very quiet, much smaller life. And Master comes along, and he was literally born to come here to do the work he did. As Swamiji said, you know, he was born to come and change the consciousness of everyone in the West. To change the consciousness of everyone in the West, that's quite a job. You know, so, I mean, he wasn't hanging out or sitting still, so he had a lot of fire. And it's just, it's interesting that you bring it up, because when you look at people and you say you can read chakras or know something about them, he had to. Many of the people who were closest to him said they didn't think he ever slept, you know, or they would think he was asleep and they'd say something and he'd answer them. I mean, many times. There's a lot of funny stories about that. But I don't know about the other masters representing the chakras. That, it may well be true. I've just never read about it or heard about it. Does anybody else have any other questions or comments before I'm going to go back down to the to the first chakra again, but does anybody want to make a comment or ask anything? No? Let me just get over there. I want to... This is what happens when you speak second. You sort of have to adjust where you go based on where whoever spoke first went. So anyway, I'm going to go back into the first chakra now just for a minute, but to talk about what are some of the negative aspects. Again, when we say negative, you know, again, it has the wrong connotation because it's the English language, but we who are yogis and trying to grow, we're asking ourselves, how can we know if we're, what are all the signals that we're getting back when we're on the path? You know, if you feel, as Master said, clear about where you want to go, calmly active and actively calm, that sounds like, I mean, of course it came from Master, so it's the truth, but when you hear it, you can even hear, just sounds like somebody who's solid, who knows what they want, who knows where they're going, and who can, now calmness comes in, of course, as a quality of a chakra, just like that, up more at the fifth chakra, but it doesn't matter. As I said, these are not linear. They don't just build on each other. They build with each other. There's no such thing as really linear. You can't be linear when you're an energetic reality. But again, our language makes it seem that way. But if you get really too fixed on an idea and you can't let go of it, and you become, you know, we think of being tyrannical as having a lot more to do with the third chakra, but if you become so fixed, really fixed in a place, and you inflexible, you just don't want to budge at all, then you might be a little too, that might be based more on insecurity than it is. It doesn't sound like a strength in a chakra. I mean, you can even hear it when you, or you meet somebody like that. They're so fixed in their ways. They're never open to new ideas. They are too afraid to move from what they know. That's not really using the energy of the chakra in the best way. However, if you stick to ideals, and the ideals are something that's moving you towards a state of expanded consciousness, that's very different. If you don't let yourself be dragged off the path, this is a very interesting thing for those of us who were not necessarily born and raised in a spiritual community, but we have a lot of people in our lives, I know I do, who are not on a spiritual path. And it's remarkable how often I hear, I remember I became a vegetarian when I was in my 20s, and vegetarianism was not then what it is now. But I also got into a thing where I would only eat whole grains. It was very challenging to do this. I had to make most of my own bread. I had to make granola, and, you know, it just didn't exist. If there was one health food store in a big city, it was a big deal. And, I mean, what we call a health food store. But my husband and I were just very committed to it, and we stayed on that rather, it wasn't a strict diet to us. We loved it, but I don't think I ate a grain of refined food for over 25 years. Now I do. I was happy to have a cookie tonight, but for a long time I didn't. But people would always say to us, every time we went out, it was so interesting, they would say, oh, come on, treat yourself, have a little chicken tonight, or eat some meat, or come on, you deserve it. Like, what does that mean? You deserve to eat because they love these things. You know, very hard for them to imagine. I can't tell you how many times people have said to me, if I've been traveling with them, or even not traveling, just going out, oh, come on, you can skip meditation one night. You don't have to meditate. Or we want to get up and leave on the hike at 6 in the morning. Can't you just let it go for one day? You know, and you have to be strong in that, because you know you're not going to even do as well during the day, or at least I do, maybe many of us in this room, if I don't meditate. And I say to them, no, you can get up and go earlier if you want, or what time do you want to leave? 6? I'll get up at 4:30, I often say to my friends. But it's funny how much it disturbs people if you're doing things that they're not doing. It's an interesting quality. I don't know what it is. There was a time, so I'd been a vegetarian for a very, very long time. It bothered so many people. My grandmother used to be sure, you don't eat anything, she would say. And I would say, look at me. Do I look like I don't eat anything? But I didn't eat anything because I would eat around the main course. When I decided, God, it was a lot of years ago now, I don't remember, but at some point I decided that I wanted to add a little fish back into my diet, and it was fascinating what happened. Everybody started saying to me, you can't eat fish. You're not supposed to eat fish. It was just so interesting how fixed people get on I don't know what that is, you know. You hold qualities for them or something. Very, very interesting, actually. So here I just wrote a note, trying to make people behave as we want them to in terms of the more contractive side of the first chakra that I was just talking about before, when we're sure that we know what would be good for somebody, and which is really almost never the case unless we're incredibly good listeners and we're taking our cues from them. The second chakra is, of course, represented by water, which means it's that part of us that can be fluid, that can be flexible, that really could, at its best, change direction in a moment's notice and not be thrown off by that. Very hard for a lot of people. I mean, a lot of people really like to know where they're going, and they don't want the plans to change, and that's a second chakra issue. I mean, so I'm talking more about qualities of people now. Connie alluded to some of the physical problems. Water is a very interesting thing because it has a form, but it doesn't hold that form. I could have water in this glass, and it's in one form, and if I took it and poured it out onto the rug, you know, it has a completely different form. So it's still water, but it's able to change its form. Was that funny? I'm sorry. It's just water. You didn't see it? It's just water. Now it's in a different form. But we also know that we can see water in the form of steam, ice. I mean, water, it's not, again, like a piece of granite or stone. So we're starting to see that we're moving, as we move up the chakras, we're moving away from form that has to be in only one form to be real. It's a form that says, wait a minute, maybe the limits and the boundaries aren't what I thought they were. So maybe I could flow a little this way, or I'll flow that way, and it'll really be fine. And gee, we were going to go to this restaurant tonight, but at the last minute somebody says, you know, I don't feel like it, let's go here. And I'm sure you all know people for whom that would be a really serious issue. I have a couple of friends, they just need to know pretty far down the road. You know, one of them, if I travel, you can wake up in the morning and they're already saying, what are we going to be doing tonight? And I feel like, who cares? Can we just, like, be in the moment? But they care. And I've learned, really, out of respect for those people, to try and give them that safety. Say, okay, here's the plan. I know full well the plan might change. This is, again, starting to see things not just in physical form, but in spirit. It's the beginning of a transformation. So again, you have to, because we're talking about all this in a physical reality, you have to use your imagination, but you can see. Remember I told you, we went, all this energy as it started vibrating at different levels, went from ether to air to fire, you know, and then that fire was so molten that it started to flow and became fluid and liquid, and now, and then reformed, not coalesced, but something like that, I can't think of the right word, till it was solid again. Now we're tracing it back because we want to go back. We'd like to be back in that spiritual reality. This fluidity, this flexibility, creativity has a lot to do with the second chakra. So people who are artists, you know, or people who might have a second chakra that's with a lot of energy flowing through it. And as Connie said, people who are out of balance the other way are just very wishy-washy. They can't hold any form. They might get three different college degrees and still not know what they want to do. They have trouble making decisions. Because our second chakra speaks a lot about sexuality, the delusion is that we can satisfy ourselves that way. And if we think of it sexually, so people who really are compelled to have a lot of repeated constant sexual experiences, thinking that's what's going to make them, I don't want to say happy, because of course sometimes it does make you feel pretty happy, but that's going to be what's going to solve their their issues or really bring them. We're talking about a spiritual changing our level of consciousness. So it's one thing to have an enjoyable moment in the world. It's another thing to get fixated there and to think that's the only place that pleasure comes from. And of course, it's not uncommon. I mean, that's the consciousness of the West. So there's a lot of people who move like that. These are people who are, you know, there's a restlessness. And again, when people are restless, they're looking outside for something to calm them down. You could think of these people as being fickle in a kind of way. I mean, these are all words that used to describe people who have their that second chakra. People who can adapt, but they become sort of ungrounded with it. So you put them in a new place or under a new circumstance, and it confuses them. So anyway, second chakra. I'm just running through them. I'd like to get through them all. I think it would feel incomplete if we don't. Third chakra I spoke about a lot already, but it has to do with fire, with real determination, with willpower, with stick-to-itiveness, with people who are able to make decisions and make them quickly. And, you know, it's interesting. And I move very fast like that. I make big decisions. I make them quickly. I think it's all come together. It's not something that comes out of being a doctor. I think it's part of why I could be a doctor. It's very easy for me to take charge and just keep moving things. And my husband constantly, poor guy, I don't know how many times in our life he's had to say, honey, slow down. I can't keep up with you. I mean, it's just not his nature. And, you know, when you think of it energetically, and there's nothing I could do to get him. I mean, he moves fast in the world, but in terms of making decisions, going, changing directions, this, it's so much easier for me to do it. And then every once in a while, I sort of have to stop and say, wait a minute, where's Barry? You know, it's, I mean, in a way, it's just really true because they're very different qualities. And just like I couldn't change that in me, you know, it's not anything that's going to be easily changed in him. And that's it's interesting to see those things and to try and be respectful of them in people so you're not railroading them or getting caught, again, thinking your way is the right way, your way is the right way for you, but it may not be for anybody else. This is a chakra that has to do really essentially with personal transformation. I mean, this is where we make this decision. Just like Krishna was saying to Arjuna, are you going to move forward and which way are you going to take your life now? It's a very meaningful moment in our spiritual progress. Are you going to make this decision and allow yourself to be transformed and live your life moving in a spiritual direction? Or are you going to get stuck in your lower chakras? One of the things that I want to say out loud that's important, there's no such thing as a good or a bad chakra. That doesn't exist. You hear people talk about it all the time. People use these words. So somebody will say, oh, I have good parking karma. You know, like they have any idea what parking means, but they get parking spaces a lot, so they'll use it. But I think they use it like this, too. They'll say, oh, they're just so, not just stuck in a lower chakra, but they use it in a pejorative sense, like having anything to do with our lower chakras is bad. It's absolutely not bad. You cannot be balanced up above. It would be like trying to build a building without having the proper foundation. Every chakra is good as long as it's, again, balanced like we're talking about. This chakra is about energy. This is where we really bring the energy of, it's fiery. It feels that way. No matter what you have going on in your first and second chakra, if you don't put energy and fire behind it, you're not going to go anywhere. It takes huge willpower to do this. For Arjuna to say, okay, I have to kill this army, and I have to kill this army of these people that I've grown up with, that I love. We played games together. We studied together. We had the same nursing mothers, and now I have to kill them. I mean, it really, and I don't think we ought to underestimate this in our lives. It's not simple to make these choices. It's not simple to say, I'm going to allow myself or put myself in a position to see the world differently than I've ever known it to be. Because that's what we're asking of ourselves here. We're saying what we see is not what we get. Everything has a different meaning than what we thought. I can't prove these things. They're talking to me about Ida, Pingala, Sushumna, little whirlpools of energy, you know, or whatever it is that we're hearing. What does it mean that I could be in two places at one time, or any of the, you know, you could think of the most dramatic forms of being spiritually free. And we have all these people telling us, yes, this happens, yes, this happens. But it's a very hard decision to make. It affects not just us, often everybody in our world. And it takes a lot of willpower and a lot of energy to do it. If we don't do it here, if we don't say, okay, I'm grounded, I'm feeling pretty flexible, I'm letting energy flow through me now, I'm going to do this and make the decision and stick to it, we'll just stand still at best or move backwards. Swamiji says, on the spiritual path, there's no such thing as standing still. If you're not moving forward, you're moving back. And probably, I know I've had that experience. You really have to bring a lot of willpower to it. This is where it becomes very clear, and I'm saying it in many ways. Life, as we know it, really is a day-to-day battle. It's the truth between subconsciousness and superconsciousness. That's what it is. It's this ongoing battle. Gee, am I going to get lazy and watch movies every night? I really love watching movies. Or am I going to do something that might be more uplifting? And again, I'm not casting any aspersion on watching a movie every once in a while. That's not the point. But it's moving towards that tamasic, lazy. But it can just happen in so many ways. So it's a battle. And I think it's a particularly difficult chakra because it has to do with power. And for many people on the spiritual path, they don't like the notion of power. There's a tremendous misunderstanding on the spiritual path of being really sweet and easy and going along with anything, and that's spiritual, being quiet, never expressing anything. And it's not at all spiritual. It might be great spiritual energy in the right circumstance, but it's not always. Power is the hardest divine attribute for people to begin to own, the hardest one for people to make sense of on the spiritual path. It's just not how anybody conceived of the path, that you really have to be a warrior. And you do. Doesn't mean you're out there fighting with people. You have to be a warrior in your spine. That's where this battle is being fought. Okay, the other side of this chakra is people who become fanatical, people who become really ruthless. I mean, Hitler is always the example that's used. So it's all of this fire and determination, but it's turned in a really negative, overly aggressive is really the way to put it. The fourth chakra. Let me answer that in a generic sense, although it's complicated because you're telling me something about yourself. But that says a lot to you. I mean, if we weren't here and we really wanted to talk about that, you know, we would understand so much about you that would be very meaningful. I mean, when we talk about self-honesty, so to ask that question, why is it that when somebody thinks about raising their energy, grabbing hold of their energy, it just gets exhausting? I mean, it's not surprising to me in a way, but it's just like saying, it would be like coming in to see me in my medical office and saying to me, I have a horrible cough and a fever and I'm coughing up green sputum. I mean, you know, there's a diagnosis that can be made, almost. Now, I'm not going to diagnose you here, don't worry. But I mean, it says something, and it's not good or bad. There's no judgment in it. It's incredibly honest of you to say that, but it really does talk about just, it's perfect that you say it, really, because we're talking about what happens when energy gets blocked. It is exhausting. You know, we talk about this energy being blocked. Yogananda called it thwarting cross currents of ego, because, you know, when energy's flowing up this way, that's wonderful. It's uplifting. It gives us energy. When it's not, when it's being held down, it basically goes out and it dissipates. And it's energy. So you're losing energy. So it's a very meaningful thing that you said that. Let me just leave it there. And something that, you know, I think would be wonderful. You see that, you know that. It's like, wow, you really have some stuff to work with. Good for you. Yeah, right. Yoo-hoo. Well, that's what I said. Remember when I said before that there's no such thing as good or bad. You know, Yogananda said, and you will live this many times in your life if you look at it, every situation in life is neutral. The only thing that changes is what we do with it. And his disciple, Sister Gyanamata, who many of us know, she says so beautifully, she said, I always pray, God, don't change my circumstance, change my consciousness. So I'm not trying to be light or glib with you. I'm saying there's nothing good or bad or right or wrong about what you said. What's going to matter is what you do with it. So, and that's what I'm talking about. It's not easy. I mean, you're saying exactly what I said. It is not easy. It takes a lot of energy and willpower and willingness and commitment to keep growing spiritually. The tendency, that's the devil, is to just hold us back. When we move into the fourth chakra, which is the element is air, this is really where this separation comes in from the lower three chakras, all of which had to do with earth elements, earth, water, fire. And now we're formless. I mean, in a way, we can contain air, but if we don't try and contain it, it will just expand to fill up whatever space it's given. So we are really, this is a big jump into our spiritual reality. And somebody was asking, Mirella, I think you did, about intuition and the heart. The big thing here with the heart chakra and the heart energy is, are we talking about likes and dislikes, as Connie said, which are poison to the spiritual aspirant? Because every like and dislike that we have, and of course we all have them, sets us up to have a need in this material reality. And when the need's not met, it sets us up for constant disappointment. And we have so many likes and dislikes. I wish I had Master's statement here because, I quote, it's so perfect, you can't paraphrase him. You inevitably lose a lot. But he said human beings are basically just ingenious in thinking of ways to live in delusion. I mean, there's an unending number of ways. And that's the way it is with our likes and dislikes. We're talking about the difference between devotion and emotion. We're talking about the difference between detachment and, dispassion in a way that's like uninvolvement at all. But what we're talking about in the heart is how can we be very involved, keep our heart open, know love, see God in everyone and everything so that all we see in the world is love. But it is love that we take, so we have an intuition, but we don't know it to be true. True love, true intuition, until we take that energy consciously and thoughtfully and we move it from our heart up to the point between the eyebrows where we know the truth then. So intuition does come to us in our heart when our hearts are more pure. You know, if we're emotional, we can't know the truth. There's that wonderful, wonderful story in the autobiography of a yogi where, I'm so sorry that I don't have these quotes exactly, but Sri Yukteswar had an experience where he saw Babaji, and he got so emotional about it. He was saying, I've got to go and get you a treat. I've got to get you something. And Babaji was saying, Lahiri, I don't need anything. I don't want anything. I want you to sit and be with me. We're not going to be together that long. Stay here. But Lahiri couldn't. And he said, no, you just have to wait. I can't believe. He was like that. Like, I can't believe it's you. I mean, it was Babaji, after all, who was there. And he ran home. And when he came back, Babaji was gone. And sometime later, he was with his guru, who was Lahiri, Mahashaya said, this is Sri Yukteswar who met Babaji. Now he's sitting with Lahiri, and Babaji walks into the room. And Sri Yukteswar's mad at him. So he shuns Babaji. And, you know, Lahiri looks at him and says, you're turning your back on Babaji? And Babaji looked, you know, very calmly, and he says, you're angry with me, aren't you? And Sri Yukteswar said, of course I'm angry, you disappeared. And, you know, Babaji basically says to him, I was fairly extinguished from the ether by your emotions, meaning a subtle form of energy, the truth, intuition, pure love, cannot exist in the face of all of that emotion. When we're very emotional, and emotional generally means we need something. So most of the way that we love as human beings is with a need attached to the other person. It can be quiet or a subtle need, but we want something from them. That's usually what's going on. Or we're sure they're going to make us feel complete, whole, more uplifted, you know. Oh, I'm getting married. This will solve all my problems. You know, right? There's a misunderstanding of what happens in most marriages. But I mean, it's like that. That's what human love, the human heart, can be injured so easily, can be hurt so easily. However, when it's divine love, when it's devotion, and this is so important because Sri Yukteswar, who's a Jnana Yogi, means he teaches mostly through book teaching, intellectual understanding. He made the comment, you cannot put one foot in front of the other on the spiritual path until you've developed devotion, but true devotion, not that emotional that fairly extinguishes the gurus from the ether. You know, that was such an incredible statement that he made. So this is very tricky because we're saying be impersonal with people in a kind of way, but not cold, you know. I remember when Swami made the statement, you know, that, I don't know if he said any true yogi, but he said disciples, any disciple, he was talking up at the village, should be able to live with any other disciple without a problem. In other words, doesn't matter who you think you're in love with. And really, when you think of arranged Indian marriages, it's pretty much that. You don't meet the person, you're just here, and it's like, okay, look, your stars work, we read it all, this is for you, marry this person. And their marriages certainly work at least as well as ours do here, you know, if not better. And it's really the truth. I heard this thing about 6 months ago on the news. In England, the divorce rate was so high that they were starting to have these, what do you call them? You know, where you go to a store, you're getting married, and you make a list of the things you want. What are they called, those lists? Registry. They were having divorce registries. Isn't that amazing? This is in England, this was in London, but it was happening. I mean, so what's happened? This is what happens when it's human love, emotional love. And we're not just, it's not just love. It's not at all that human love. It's pure love of the heart, which means seeing God in everyone. It means a rather impersonal nature, even with your partner. Because really, it's only when you're living in that way that you're going to be able to find complete peace in that relationship. Otherwise, you're always needing something from people. You're always going to need them to be a little different than who they are. You're always going to need them to be a little more like you. You're always shocked when they're not, or that they're not living to just anticipate and satisfy your needs. I mean, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but if you really think about it, not by much. This is what happens in most of our relationships. It happens even with parents and children and brothers and sisters and even a lot of friendships because it's lacking that impersonal quality of trying to take the feeling here and keep it up here. And the closer we get to that, the more we get to that, the more easily we can love everybody. I'm not going to take time to tell this story, but many of you have heard me tell the story of when I had the spiritual epiphany that my husband, who I'm with, who's still my husband, that as long as we were both in a human body, I was going to be with him. I think I might have even told it here, but maybe not. It doesn't matter. It's a wonderful story. But what came to me with that, and this was not, I didn't figure this out. This was inspired. This was total grace from God. You will only and always see God in him. You will never, from this moment on, see anything wrong with him again. Wrong with him. When you look into his eyes, you will see Divine Mother looking back at you. Now, that is the truth. It's not like I had to make up some fantasy. I could say it about anybody in this room. If I look at you, and that was the spiritual epiphany. It became a gift to me, whether I've succeeded 100% with my husband or not, which I am not, but close and way better than if I hadn't had that epiphany. But I've learned it always with other people now. This is God looking right at you. You're making a meal for God right now. You're opening the door. The next client who walks in, the next everybody who comes to your class, everybody, see, everybody is God. It becomes such an extraordinary love and so impersonal. And you don't need anything from anybody because they're already all of it. You can't get it wrong. If you see everybody as being divine, they're perfect just as they are. And it's not silly. I promise you, if you put it into practice in any way, you start having more and more of the experience. You move from being intolerant to tolerant, from being judgmental to loving, not just accepting, but of seeing perfection in front of you. And does it happen overnight? Well, it didn't for me. But am I doing it better than I was doing it before that epiphany? Absolutely. Remember, we said any step in the right direction is great spiritual progress. So you just start a little habit like that. You don't see people as people. You bring it up here. You move the energy up. And here's another thing. When you do that and you sit with it, you get the next affirmation of an intuition. You know then for sure if it's loud and strong. Everything has to be held in this light, ultimately, to know if it's true. And it's unbelievably freeing to be able to love everybody just as they are. It's the most freeing thing in the world. I feel it even when I'm on a Saturday, if I'm spending a Saturday, because, you know, the people the closest us, it's the hardest. They're our greatest teachers. They really are. Very easy for me to love every patient. I've probably really genuinely loved 98% of my patients. Genuinely. It's really easy. They have nothing to do with my life. I'm there to serve them. It's simple. It gets harder and harder and harder. And then I get to my brother. That's really hard. Then I get to a dear friend who's been a friend my whole life. That's really hard. Then I get to my husband. Hardest. They just, that's what it means when they said they can ring your bell. Not a good bell to have rung, you know. But it's true. We've let them in. We're drawn to them for some reason. So when I can just hold my husband there, even on days where he might be feeling a little scritchy himself or out of sorts, or maybe he'd like to try and start a fight. Maybe I'd like to try and start a fight, but I don't. Or I see that he's just leaning into a little fight, you know. No, I'm not going to budge. I'm here with God. I'm going to treat you just like God. I love you just exactly as you are. What can I do, honey, to make your day better? How can I be with you today? What would you like from me? And my God, you just feel like this instead of, why are you doing this to me? And you just feel so contracted, you know? So, now, the danger is that you go right to this impersonal nature with somebody, which is what people do on the spiritual path. They become completely detached, thinking that's spiritual. That's not spiritual. What's spiritual is to be able to feel that every human being that you're with, that you're in love with. You know, people talking about individually making love to God. You know, how else do we do it? We do it in everybody, and I don't mean on the physical plane. I mean making love in our hearts and holding it up. Let me just cover the fifth chakra, and then we'll just stop because, you know, we've already said, we'll all come back. We'll do this for 8 weeks. We'll do it a few more times in this life together. I just wrote this note, which Swami must have said, always offering inner qualities up to the quality above it. And that's what came up to me when you asked that question, Mirella, is that yes, you get it in the heart, but you offer it up. Firmness, intuition, real zeal to advance, and the willpower to move in spirit, upward affirmation of the heart. I wrote those, that must have been his words, so I'm just sharing them now. This fifth chakra, the throat chakra, is the element is ether. So, I mean, if you think of ether, you can see we are really now way beyond any physical form. We've come a long way on this spiritual journey. And it really does have to do with our ability to express ourselves, to find our voice. But remember, it's not just in the world, although we do need to do these things in the world. But it means, again, spiritually, the quality that goes with it is calmness. And Swamiji talks about calmness. It is, by the way, one of the eight attributes that we'll talk about. But he says peace, which is also one of the eight attributes, is a much earlier attribute that people get to because it's sort of the absence of agitation, whereas calmness has a certain energy to it. You have to bring energy. That's when Master said, be calmly active and actively calm. It's like bringing energy in to be calm. It's a kind of calm dispassion. You know, Connie said before, and it's true, as you move further up these chakras, they get harder and harder to put words to because they're beyond words. I mean, it is really what starts happening. When we used to do a class for each chakra, we'd look at each other when we get to the sixth and seventh, like, you're kidding, we have to talk about this for 2 hours. You can't say anything. I mean, better we should all just sit and meditate together. It's really, in a way. But not so much with the fifth chakra, because this is an obvious, in terms of the chakras, expansion of consciousness. Because now it is really completely formless. And Connie mentioned, so I don't need to go through this, that the side of it when it's out of balance is a real restlessness. It's having that quality that we call mercurial, which means that we're constantly changing depending on the environment that we're in. So we're not being calmness. This isn't attaining a state of feeling calm. This is literally being calmness. So let me just stop there. I think this is a good place for us to end. This is not linear. You could not be a in-the-world, responsible, heartfelt, creative person and make it work if your second chakra is too out of balance. I'll just use that word. Where it's like building blocks, but they're not linear. So, yes, you know, just like I'm saying, you can have, intuition can come in the heart, but you want to bring it up here. Creativity can come, it feels like it's coming, because intuition does, through the heart. It's not, you know, the chakras are not, only creativity is shut in that second chakra. It's not like that. They don't have boundaries and walls and limits. There's a tremendous interplay of this energy. So I think this is very hard. I don't think it's only taking sexual energy and turning it into creativity, because, you know, you're thinking that there's a certain energy that's only sexual. I mean, energy is energy. So I think it's creativity in a much broader sense, because we're not stuck in a form. So it's the creative energy that can flow when you allow energy to flow. And the sexual energy, certainly we know of people transforming sexual energy. You know, there are athletes who make sure that they have no sexual encounters of any kind for weeks before an event because they want to take that energy and use it. It's actually very wise. And I've heard many people talk about stories like that. But it's not only sexual energy that becomes creative. So I think creative energy is creative energy. When it comes through the heart, it might look a certain way. You know, it might have a certain more devotional quality to it. I don't even know for sure that it would have to. But I think the mistake that we can make is to think that these are separate entities acting separately. They're not. And nothing about it is really linear. That's all. That's the only way I know how to say it. It's not here, 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 here. You know? And even our pictures look that way, although you saw that picture of the meditating yogi and all that. It was just filled with energy going in all directions at all times, the picture that Connie showed us. So, yeah, I think these things are also very hard for the human mind to grasp. And I don't want to speak like I got it, you know, but I think just from hearing it so many times, I don't think it's second chakra creativity is because we've transformed sexual energy. It's because we've transformed energy from solid stuck to allowing it to flow a little. That's how I would say it to you. Okay, we'll see you next week, but Connie won't see you.